Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the PR Essentials Summit. In this conversation, we're going to be talking about the state of PR and all things PR with our lovely ladies here. I have April. I always forget which last.
White.
April.
I'm an enigma.
Yes.
Actually, I'm going for just April eventually. Like Prince.
Just April. Yeah, I can do that with Ron Genie.
You can actually pull that off. I can.
Yeah. April White, she's the CEO and founder of Trust Relations. And then we also have here Mary Elizabeth Alcordi, who's the CEO and founder of Alcordi Global Relations. Say hello.
Hi.
So we're going to have a quick, nice discussion and conversation. You know, this summit has always been targeted towards people who are doing their own marketing, PR, and PR people and marketing people that have done it before and just kind of need to brush up or want to get the latest. So I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about the PR landscape right now, because it's shifting quite tremendously and I've seen a shift, and I'd like to hear about what kind of shifts you guys have seen. So maybe I'm going to start here with April. What do you think is going on in PR today?
I mean, there's so much going on. One of the big shifts that I've seen in the last month or two is that on the consumer side, which we do both B2B and B2C, you know, work and work with clients of lifestyle, consumer, et cetera, CPG, blah, blah, blah. And in that space, what I'm seeing is a shift towards people being more interested in affiliate marketing in lieu of PR. So I'm getting feedback like, hey, our budget's going to affiliate marketing instead of PR. Are you doing that? But I think that I think there's an offer in the consumer space to then make sure that we're positioning how PR can interface with affiliate marketing and or, you know, add affiliate marketing as a tactic that you're offering as an agency, either as a third-party add-on through another provider or actually in-house. So right. I sort of, in the consumer space, I almost feel like affiliate marketing is the new social media. And remember back in the day, maybe like 10 years ago or so, maybe even fewer, where it was like everyone is adding social media as the thing they do in addition to PR.
Yes.
I feel like the new version of that is affiliate marketing. And if you're not doing that as a consumer facing firm, you're missing out.
Wow. That's a good insight, little tidbit.
It's interesting.
Mary, what about you? What are you seeing on, I always, when I think of you, I think of you like as news trends, like trends in the news, storytelling, but I could be wrong. So what are you guys seeing over there?
I mean, affiliate marketing is definitely something that I can relate to from like the e-commerce side of what we do. And it's an often asked thing, but from, you know, the PR side of like the media relations side of what we do, I mean, it's really people want things that are timely and on trend. Like if your client has no footprint whatsoever and they expect a feature, like good luck. Like that's just not happening. I had someone ask me, like someone wants to work with us and they're like, my client only wants New York Times. And I'm like, oh, I said, what's the New York Times like level story that we're telling? And for some people, like that just doesn't make sense for them. And they don't really do features on like people that they've never heard of. Like even if they're impressive within their own community, I've had like people from the White House that they turned down. Like, you know, so it's not against you. It's not personal. It's like, they always say, it's not personal. It's business. It's not personal. It's news. Right. Yeah. And I think that's something that clients really struggle with. And especially with so many of these news sites downsizing so much and the layoffs are real. Like if you're not really hitting, like you want to be in these top tier places, and how are you being relevant to the narrative today? Because like there's less people to do more of these human interest stories and features on this like really cool CEO that's did something cool. It's more so like, okay, awesome, you did that. And like, there's always the and.
Yeah. And most of those guys are missing the and. But I agree with you. A lot more people are saying, what's the shortcut to get into the New York Times? What's the shortcut to get into Wall Street Journal? You're like, you have, like you said, zero footprint. And now you want a feature. I don't know what to tell you.
Good luck.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck. I was talking to somebody earlier. I was telling you guys at a previous panel in our content, thought leadership panel, we were talking about how to build thought leadership. And one of the insights John Biggs was giving me, he was just saying that, you know, same thing, like there's a lot less people, but, you know, it's now time where you're really going to be producing a lot of your own content, telling your own story. And I feel like, April, to what you said about social media, like we added on social media as a PR element. I feel like content development had been added too in a couple of years ago, right? As with the 100% the
content
and
marketing.
Stuff like that.
Yep.
So I think that's probably a huge, you know, new trend that's going to be, it's going to be an interesting shift for PR people, because I don't think traditionally companies and brands say, oh, PR people, I'm going to go to them for content. I don't think they normally say that.
I agree with that. But there's a really nice synergy between content marketing and PR, right? Because you can develop that, the blog pieces that then get repurposed as themes for Byland articles or vice versa. I mean, there should be that kind of sharing happening between the intellectual capital that you're gaining as you're working on the account. So it makes a lot of sense for us to do it. It just hasn't been something that we've traditionally positioned ourselves as doing until now.
I don't think people see that connection that you're talking about. That is the connection, but I see it. You see it. We see it internally, but then I don't think people think that, oh, that's a marketing activity,
right?
You know, and then how do we bridge that gap between, and that's always been the case, how do you bridge the gap between PR and marketing, and, you know, where should we live?
100%.
Or are we now calling ourselves marketing agencies?
Well, I mean, there to that point, there is this continued blend between, you know, the earned and the paid and the owned spaces that's getting more and more blurry, right? I mean, there are so many broadcast opportunities that are pay for play, and, you know, almost the majority now on the consumer side. There's obviously all the Forbes councils and the, you know, Entrepreneur Council and the Newsweek Council and the Rolling Stone Council.
All of
those cost money to be on the council, but not to publish the article. But it's sort of like, you know,
but
somewhere
kind of
between
the
same, you know. So there's that. And then there's also, I mean, back in the day, it was like you could just pitch a speaking op and that didn't have to have any money attached to it. And now it's like, we would love for them to be a speaker. The speaker packages start at this sponsorship
$20,000.
Exactly. And it's like, So there are all these places and spaces where it's starting to get murkier. And again, on the consumer side, not to keep going down that rabbit hole, but it's like, if you don't have an affiliate marketing program set up and you're trying to pitch a product to the press, God help you. Because if you aren't sending an affiliate link to those journalists, you're never going to be in a listicle.
Yeah.
Never. Never.
Yeah. And then on most e-commerce retail brands don't want to be on, they're like, I don't want to be on Amazon, or I don't want to be on whatever host.
If they want consumer press, they have to be.
Yeah.
They have to be. But it's, you know, there's that. And then it's just everything is starting to get a little bit murkier. So
yeah, it feels like the kind of lens to the reputation of the media over the past couple years, too. It's just, you know, happens to PR. PR, I think, essentially is reputation management, right? Or building and management.
Building credibility and managing reputations, yeah.
But if the media is no longer credible, then how do we build that credible presence for potential customers, you know?
That is what keeps me up at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, because our entire existence as an industry is predicated on the fact that we are building credibility by getting our clients into news outlets that inherently have greater credibility than they do as a brand.
Right.
Which lends the publication's credibility to the brand that's featured in the publication. But if nobody cares anymore about those publications or thinks they're all pay for play or thinks that they're all falling back into the owned and paid space where it's like, it's probably somehow there's money exchanged behind the scenes. If that and or just the general credibility of the media fails, I don't know what happens to PR. So that's like I hate to be the like Scrooge, but that's just what
realistic.
Yeah. It's really concerning. It's really concerning.
Yeah. And maybe I'm, you know, just thinking about what all of us do, because I know a little bit, obviously, about all three of us. And just based on how we pitch and how, April, you probably guys pitch, and I know how Mary pitches. Also, I wonder if, like, this is really going to end up becoming the battle of people instead of the battle of brands. And, like, it's going to be more people that are doing independent thought leadership, more independent.
Thought leadership is everything now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead
and it's
of
a requirement.
The brand.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of that. I mean, and the other thing that concerns me is the rise in paid content paywalls, because then how do you justify to your clients, okay, cool, we got you in this exclusive publication that only a handful of people, I mean, more than a handful, but, you know, they have to pay for it. So, okay, cool, we got you this placement, but you're not allowed to share it unless you pay. And usually there's some kind of crazy fee attached to
each article
that you're trying to get from behind the paywall to be able to use in your marketing or on your website or send in an e-newsletter or whatever. So it's just harder and harder for them to even understand the value of publications that are including them in stories that are behind paywalls that people have to subscribe to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's another one of these things that keeps me up at night.
Another one.
And with that note, this conversation's over. Well, I think this kind of touches on the next question that I wanted to present to you guys was things we wish that clients knew. And I think, you know, that kind of the state of the media, I always start a lot of conversations with potential or new clients. I always start with the state of the media, because I like them to understand what we're walking into, even though they don't really get it still. You know, they just like trying to listen, but they don't. What do you wish, Mary, that clients knew when you're working on like pitching stories and things like that?
I mean, I think my point before about the importance of timeliness, whenever we're like doing a new business call or something like that, I'm always setting the expectations of the difference between like what an earned media company does and not, right?
Right.
So like provide opportunities, but we can't guarantee placements. Like we can guarantee opportunities, but there's a lot of factors that go into something actually placing. Some are on the client side from just saying yes or being available to like understanding how different types of opportunities have different timelines. And there's like, I feel like I'm a therapist the first couple of months I'm with a client. Because like 2 weeks in, even though you tell them like you need 2 weeks to get going and they start pitching in the third week, they like a lot of them conveniently forget it once you start working. They're like, why hasn't anything placed? I'm like, you breathe first and second, like you have to walk a little bit before you can run. And especially with these like newer brands that have nothing, it's like they expect to go from zero to like 2000 overnight. And with anything in life, it's like steps on a ladder. If the steps are too wide, you're not going to like get to the top of the ladder. It doesn't mean you like move faster along it. Like you have like if you hit a story that really resonates with people, but it's like steps, like small steps on a ladder that lead to like larger steps in the long run. And I think it's just that understanding. And it's also a lot of people are like very commitment phobe in PR, like anything in life. We live in a very commitment phobe society. And so the idea of like understanding, you know, like for instance, there's like a client that wants to work with us for like 2 months, but wants me to like change our pay structure to like guarantee like certain things or not get paid, like get paid for part of it and get paid till.
Oh, wow. That's bold.
And I'm just like, we can't work that way. Or my favorite is a client. This is my favorite. A client like where we had an agreed upon amount of time because we work 8 hours, reduces the time, still expects the same level of results, and then changes the terms to 4 placements that place every month. And that if he doesn't see 4 placements, that he just pays us part of the reduced fee. Without
they
giving
get to do whatever
up.
They feel like.
Yeah, I get no heads up. I just see the bank account, you know, and I'm like, wait, did this guy just pay me a third of what we charged at a reduced rate? And like when you like challenge them, like for instance, like, hey, if we don't see like this is our minimum spend, you know, if we don't hit that even, and it's still cheaper than anywhere else you go, really, that has like the level of team that we have.
Yeah.
Then they're like, well, how many placements did you get us last month at place? And I'm like, you're not hearing me. That's a really hard thing to understand. Like I was just telling someone, it's like they expect you to have like a little black book where you just put in PR dollars and outcomes TechCrunch or outcomes Wire. And it's just really not how that works at all. Like I wish it was, like I would be charging like 4 times the amount that I charge then. But it's just not how this works. And the thing is, like when you see how much like pay content is, so like for like Elle magazine, I think it's like $50,000 for an article where you get 70,000 guaranteed views, but like you don't know who these views are.
Yeah.
Or like they do a post on social media, 500,000 impressions guaranteed. Okay, cool, but what's the conversion rate? But people are willing to spend 50 G's, but like I'm charging a certain amount
I'm charging $1,000 and you don't even want to pay for that. That's like,
yeah, or like even $2,500. And like, the thing is, like, you get so many more opportunities that may include that within that year, in addition to like probably tens of others. Yeah. Instead of spending that amount and it's like earned and it doesn't say paid, right? Like, there's a difference, and I don't think people really understand that. So I think it's, you know, understanding value, time. Because, like, I know, like, the previous firms I worked with, they have, like, 6-month, 1-year minimums. Like, and like, you give the concept of a 3-month or two-month minimum, people still question it. I'm like, you have to, like logistically think about this. It takes us 2 weeks to go in. Even if we get opportunities in the first month, like, it doesn't mean it's going to place then. It will likely not place till the second month. And then you can start building, like, a domino effect. But, like, it's not even about the money all the time when I say, like, it's 3 months. It's really, like, you're investing in the process, right? Like, understanding that this doesn't happen overnight by any stretch of the imagination. And, like, when you are doing, like, I understand they're still providing money to us, but, like, when you are doing, like, in my opinion, a favor to a company that can't afford, like, your normal rates, and you do a reduced rate, or, like, you know, like, find a way to work together, and they're still arguing on how you're doing payment structures, I'm just like, bro, like, I run a 22-person company. It's not like I'm, like, some Joe Schmo freelancer who's, like...
You're not just paying me. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if they were just paying me, I'd like to think it's more expensive. My friend said the other day, who works in the industry, he's like, Mary, just admit it, you're expensive. I'm like, no, I'm not expensive, but, like, I've earned everything I had. He's like, no, it's okay to, like, admit that you're expensive. Like, you should be expensive because you run the company.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's just, like, as founders, I sometimes find it really hard when billing clients, the concept of, like, billing my time when, like, you know, you have teams and all that type of stuff. Right. But they are, like, I had a client that was texting me at 3:30 in the morning last night, expecting answers. And, like, I was with one of my friends, and they're like, are you seriously going to answer this right now? I'm like, well, he's in Europe. Like, what am I supposed to do?
I,
like,
love that you're awake at 3:30.
Oh, yeah. I'm a night owl. Also, I was watching the Christmas movie, and I was really feeling the Christmas spirit. So that's fine.
Wait, does that mean that you responded is the question?
I did respond. And then this guy still, like, he texted me this morning, we have to talk today. And I'm like, the people that work on the account are gone till Monday.
I can't give you information if I don't know. Yeah.
You know, otherwise I'm just pulling stuff out of my hat, which I really don't want to do. And, like, speaking on behalf of the people that actually have to do the work. Right. And they're like, I have to, like, teach, like, I think one of the biggest, hardest things when having a team is teaching them boundaries with clients. And I struggle with it because my name's on the door, right? But for people whose name isn't on the door, like, she's like, oh, well, they call me on the weekend and they text me. I'm like, so when they message you, what I do is I forward it to the group chat with the whole team. So it's not one-offs with me and then with the other people, because different information, conflicting information. And also, like, I understand you pay us a decent amount of money. We appreciate it. We do good work. But you're not, like, I think sometimes clients feel like they're hiring, like, when they hire us for, let's say, 30 hours, right? Which isn't that much in the scheme of things.
Yeah.
They act as if this person's full time.
Yeah.
And no. And they're like, well, do we bill for, like, the time, like, we're on the phone with them? I'm like, unless you're talking, like, friends, like, hey, how's your weekend going? They're talking to work. You're billing that time.
Yeah.
No way.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I think the boundary, especially with, I mean, I know you and I work with similar size clients. So, like, a lot of it's startups or, like, smaller companies that are trying to really ramp up some PR stuff. I do think smaller clients, and even if you give, like, I've noticed that same thing. You give them a little inch of, like, oh, okay, you know what? I'm going to help you out. There's no helping anybody. The only help you could do is just doing your job, I think. And giving anybody any sense of leeway, I mean, it takes a long time to learn this, but, like, it doesn't matter if you charge them $500 or $5,000. They're going to ask for the same level of service on both sides. It's so crazy.
Well, I had this one client who recently we parted ways, and we were doing, like, this nonprofit event for him on the side, like, helping to get, like, celebrity stuff. Like, I was donating my time for that. We were going over hours, and he asked to do influencer stuff. So I sent him a scope, right? And he's like, oh, that doesn't include the price for the influencers. I'm like, no. Doesn't improve the price for that. And then he calls one of my team members. He's like, does Mary charge for every little thing that she does? And I'm like, first of all, I didn't. But second of all, I run, I almost curse. I run a freaking business, right? Like, this is not a non-for-profit company. Like, because, and it's not even about me as the owner. Like, it's
she charged for everything she does. That's a good one.
It's not like I'm trying to be some like money hungry person. Like, I have a team I'm responsible for who also want to grow here and professional development, who want like to be able to see like they have a future here. That requires us making a profit. Like, that does not, like, it's not about me.
Yeah.
Them.
You need to stay in business to be able to be servicing them.
Yeah.
Right.
If you're over servicing them, you will go out of business and no longer be able to be there for them as their firm. Yeah.
I think that's a problem for most smaller agencies.
Yeah. You know what we did to address it is we introduced a point system. So we gamify monthly retainers. Every activity we do has points allocated to it based on the level of expertise required, the blended hourly rate, how many hours it takes on average. Uh-huh. And then they're stuck to those. So they get a set number of points to spend every month. And if they want more activity than that, we say, no problem. We'll just invoice you for the additional points if you want to do that. Or we can borrow points from next month. But it's a way of keeping them in the boundaries. And we just tell them, listen, this is for everybody's benefit to make sure we're giving you the highest level of professional service for each tactic we're doing. So the team doesn't get spread so thin, they don't do anything well.
Right.
So this is why it's this way. And then it's easier to upsell them, because if they keep busting out of their jean size every month and borrowing points from the next month and the next, and it's like, hey, you no longer fit your retainer.
Yeah.
So that has saved our asses, because it's like a built-in boundary and it's a way of making sure we aren't over-servicing to the point where we go out of business. And it just also levels us expectations so that they don't think if they're spending five a month, they get the same level of service as somebody who's spending 10 a month or 15 or 20, right? Like, that shouldn't be a thing. It should be, you get what you pay for. So if you're paying for the basic entry level retainer, then you get basic entry level PR.
Yeah. That's how it works. Yeah, 100%. Or like when a client's telling you that they want to reduce their hours, but they haven't told you yet and you're still doing work. So I send them the normal invoice, right? They're like, I told you I don't want to do this much. Okay, then what do you want to do? Because we're still doing work. We just got you on, you know, top, I don't want to call them out. So top tier media.
Yeah.
Right. And a speaking opportunity whilst you have yet to decide. You know, it's like halfway through the month. So
yeah, draw a line in this. I just hearing us, the three of us together, it's like we're very abused. We're in a very abusive relationships with our clients. I mean, there's always the good clients, right? There's always the really good ones and the really, there's always outliers. But
I hate when like you have team members who like criticize you on like some of the clients that you brought in, like Mary.
I'm just talking about this.
And it's just like, sometimes when you meet someone, well, there's two things. Sometimes when you meet someone, they sound really nice.
Yeah.
They seem really cool. They like nod, they laugh at the right points. They seem to get it.
Yeah.
At the beginning, they're like really positive, go lucky. And then like their alternative personality comes through. Alternate personality comes through and you're like, who is this person? What in the world? And people think,
where did you come from?
You made a bad choice of person. I'm like,
I didn't know they had an alter ego.
I'm not supposed to know that. Like, there's
no.
And then also, like, earlier this year, like, at least my friends from PR, like, everyone felt it. Like, people were talking recessions. A lot of clients left at the beginning of this year. August, out of nowhere, everyone started coming back. Like, now we're looking at hiring more, which I never thought this would be the case for this year at all. But earlier this year, like, a lot of, like, my friend who has a PR firm for, like, over a decade had to do the same stuff I had to do. And I'm like, okay, I'm not, like, it's not me. It's just this guy right now. And sometimes, like, my friends would joke around when I first started saying, like, Mary, you'd hoe out for clients, as in you take anyone and everyone. I'm like, well, when you have lights to keep on, if they're not a bad person, they're not morally wrong. If it's just saying, like, you know what, I'm going to take it, because would you rather not work here or would you rather work here? Mary, I really like the quality of client for like 1 month of this year. I'm like, well, you try to get new business.
Well, you get a client. Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, well, I got like, well, this one person's talking to me and I'm like, okay, so has it closed? I do 70 new business calls a month. Like, it's serious up in here. Like, 40, minimum 40 is our minimum benchmark of new business calls a month. I'm hustling all day. And someone's like complaining. I'm like, you try to get one. Like, just find one.
Yeah.
Have they closed it? Do you want to answer the question? Have they closed it?
No.
There you go.
I know. I know. It's like you bring home the bacon. Everyone's like, I don't like this. I don't
flavor.
Like this bacon. Yeah, I don't like this flavor of bacon.
Can you get me brown sugar, please?
Do you have any? This is like, and lately, I don't know if it's been the same for you. Our sales cycle used to be maybe like a 6-week turnaround or something like that. It's now more like 6 months to a year, which I've heard has become the standard in the industry, which I'm hoping will speed back up now that things are turning around. Yeah. But it's like, it's like giving birth. It's like sometimes because it's like you're waiting for them. It depends on where they are. But a lot of times it's like they're waiting for funding. And then because the funding isn't coming in now, that I keep getting, it keeps getting pushed and pushed and pushed. They wanted to start in January. And now it's like, talk to me in June of 2024, right? It's like, oh boy. So, I mean, they don't even understand. Like, you've been, in some cases, I am like nursing and curating and feeding and, you know, growing this relationship for months.
Inside of your stomach.
Yeah, it feels like it. And then it's like, I finally give birth to a new client.
I think that's the difference between, I think we're all like coming from that same kind of time frame of you put in hard work and then you reap benefits after and then you become an expert or whatever the case is. But I think a lot of the newer people, you came from journalism, Mary. I came from PR. I literally went to school for PR. I don't know. And journalism. I don't know.
Former journalist too. Yeah.
Okay. So kind of that journalism background, I think it's a little bit different when people are, and I hate putting this against each other, but this marketing background or social media background, it's a little bit different because it's like a different world that they come from. And then when the two collide, it becomes very strange because they're not used to that. They didn't have to put in that like groundwork.
Yeah.
Hey, dues, you know? I was like making phone calls when the first year I had a job, not an intern, I was making phone calls like in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
I would leave work at like, let's say like 5 or 6 o'clock, but then I'd have to come back to work like at 10 o'clock to talk to these other people like globally. And so I'd be working on all kinds of crazy. I never complained once. I was like, oh, I'm going to be so good at this after this is all done. I was like, And obviously, like, you know, I was able to reap the benefits of like putting in hard work, but I don't think the practice of marketing had that same putting in dues kind of, you know, thing.
No, definitely not. I mean, when I started out in radio, I mean, I worked in campaigns, which you have no life. And then I worked in radio, which you also have no life. And I worked like 12 to 16 hour days whilst going to school at night in radio. I only got paid for 5. Yeah. You know, I wanted to make something of myself, you know, and then you become indispensable. I'm not saying everyone should do that. Mm-hmm. In your early 20s, you have no responsibilities that are tied to you. And so that is when you do it. And like, even when I worked in PR, my first PR gig, it was similar in terms of the fact that I would be getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning and start pitching and phone pitching. And we had to pitch like 100 people a day on the phone. Try telling someone to do that now, you know, like they'll laugh in my face.
I get pushed back for sending follow-up emails. They won't even send a follow-up email.
No, I mean,
what about you, April? I think we've kind of dipped into our underused PR tactics here.
Yeah.
What have been some creative ways that you've, you know, executed some of the PR strategies that you're working on now?
So one of the things that I am trying to sort of push forward and get traction for is, I think I'm getting a lot of pushback still from clients that haven't done PR before and all the other pieces of their marketing mix, the ROI is very, not always easy to prove, but much easier, right? And so I'm running into a lot of issues with people saying, well, we need to know how many new clients we got from the PR hits we got, or we need to know how many sales we got from the PR hits we got. And that's not exactly possible. Right. So I've been trying to figure out, okay,
you didn't even want to say that out of your mouth just now.
So, but I've been trying to figure out what can make it slightly more possible, right? Yeah. So one of the things I tell them is, okay, well, there would be no way for us to know how many clients you secured from media. However, if you have an intake form every time you speak with a new client, and one of the options that they can click or tell you is that they saw you in the press, that gives you one proof point, right? We can't use UTM tracking codes in pitches and press releases, et cetera, the press will go crazy. You can maybe get by with using UTM tracking code in a press release, but not in a pitch, right? So the other thing to say is, like, if you have the capabilities in-house, let's do vanity landing pages, meaning let's do, okay, trustrelations.agency/new offer.
Yeah.
And we'll put that in the press release and in the pitches. And then your Google Analytics will be able to tell you how many people came to the special landing page that we made that was, you know, available publicly, but it doesn't look so much, it doesn't look as smarmy as a UTM tracking code if you're using it with the press, right? So you can get by with that. That's another way to do it. But there's still no guarantee that the press will actually include said vanity landing page. No, no. They might still go back to the just the normal.com or the whatever .io or .co or whatever it is. So there's no guarantee they'll do it. So there's just been, I've been trying to figure out, okay, and then also like with SEO, they know how many, you know, how is that serving their SEO purposes? So I'm trying to do a lot of like, hey, let's reach out to your SEO team in-house or your agency and figure out what are the key search terms they're trying to push and make sure we're feeding it into the PR machine so that the byline articles that we're putting out and the pitches we're putting out include those key search terms. Again, no guarantee. Except
at least we're being consistent.
Right. And we're and then ideally, in addition to getting the press hits, you get to see, okay, in addition to that, this is the number, you know, we saw with these placements that included the key search terms, the SEO was boosted for those key search terms we were previously ranking poorly for, and it goes up because we got the press. So there, I'm trying to figure out, like, how do you do shared metrics to make PR metrics look like they have more of a spine or backbone or meat or fill in the blank, however you want to say it. Like, they look more
measurable,
mathematically measurable and valid. Yeah.
Right.
So that's something that I've been trying to work at, both in terms of setting expectations with prospects up front, but also educating my team where some of these things are, like UTM tracking goes, I don't even know what that is. Right. And so trying to do, you know, kind of work in both directions and like get it so that when the clients they never ideally question the spend.
Yeah. And I think that one of the things that, I mean, over the years, I've tried to do this so many times, like, can we get access to your Google Analytics? Can we kind of see what your incoming sources are? And I think, like, it's really funny because sometimes they're so siloed that they're like, well, why do you need that? Like, you're like, wait a minute. I thought you wanted us to drive traffic. Like, you know, if you're going to ask me for measurements, then you need to help me with some of the tools that you use for your website. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all linked together. So I do think that's like, it's a really interesting dynamic you have to build.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you guys typically, like, as far as expectations, obviously we have to set expectations with media and kind of every little thing that we do, but, you know, do you feel like the clients have a good expectation of how collaborative the relationship has to be? Because I feel like that's a place that's always really hard for them to get. I don't know why.
We kind of try to head it off at the pass by having an client intake form. And at the beginning of it, it's very explicit about that this is a partnership and, you know, our success relies on our continued partnership and, you know, all the, those kinds of things. And then just gently reminding them if there's something that we need from them to be successful and just bringing it up in the biweekly calls. Hey, just a reminder, it'd be really helpful if we had blah, blah, blah. Or we, you know, I think we'd get more traction if we had a nutritionist who can speak about the efficacy of the product or, you know, rather than the CEO who like
is the CEO.
But yeah, just like decided to make the product just because, you know, like doesn't have the academic credentials to back up the claims, right? So that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's tricky. And then, yeah, I'm sort of going down a rabbit hole here and then I'll stop. But the other thing that I'm trying to encourage clients and the team to do is leverage the credibility they're getting from their media placements and their byline articles and their speaking opportunities and their awards, et cetera, to feed it back into the owned and paid side of their marketing. So it isn't just off on an island existing by itself, but that, okay, you got those media placements. Who are you trying to target? Why don't you take that article, do a Facebook ad, an Instagram ad, whatever, target the demographic, the geographic, you know, et cetera, psychographic that you're trying to reach and make sure that you're repurposing that content in front of the people that you want to make damn sure saw it.
Yeah.
And so there's like, there are like ways for them to then, and make sure it's on social media, right? You're doing social media posts, make sure you're including it in your newsletters, and make sure you feed it to your sales team in case it's useful for them when they're our age, right? So I think that the more that we can get PR to feel less like it's its own, for some reason, it's always been this weird.
It's always out there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like always out on a limb by itself. And that should not be the case. But I think when they can start to see this energy is, then they question PR less.
Yeah. Agree. Agree.
Yeah.
We're coming up kind of close to time here. And I want to kind of just leave this conversation with some either predictions or best practices from a PR standpoint or advice, PR advice, either any one of those things. I think best practices when embarking on PR is what I was originally thinking, but just even trends that you guys think. I mean, we didn't even touch on the AI.
I was just going to say, yeah.
We didn't even touch on that, but I know if I said that, that's like a 20-minute conversation. So
it is.
So what before we leave, what are our last thoughts on kind of PR trends, things to think about for the next year?
Yeah.
Do you want to kick us off, April?
Yeah. So along the lines of AI, and I will keep this contained because I know, to your point, we could go into a whole other hour about just that. But the thing that I would recommend teams start to do is, in addition to checking Google to see where if anything bad is popping up about your brand or your client or the executives at the brand or the client company, et cetera, I think people need to start checking ChatGPT to see when they insert the client's brand and or the executive team members, what comes up to make sure that there isn't like a looming crisis about to bite them in the ass. Because it's the kind of thing now where it's amalgamating all this information from the internet. And I think we're going to see a whole new practice of crisis communication centered on how to push down or change ChatGPT output.
Just like we had to do with Google.
Yes. Right. I think it's going to be a whole new phase of crisis PR. One that I don't personally think our agency is going to necessarily specialize in, but I think somebody will need to because it's a whole monster waiting to happen. It's like a monster in the wings that somebody needs to get ahead of.
That's a content monster too. It's like a lot of content. Yeah.
Monster. Yep. So somebody needs to specialize in that for everyone's sake.
I don't think the three of us are not up for that.
I don't think it's us. But I do think it's something we just need to have in the back of our minds and just know the same way they come and they say, oh my God, the third finding is now this news story that says this thing about crime, felony, jail, whatever it is, you know, or maybe not even that horrible, but sustainability madness or you know, something like that. I think we just need to be mindful that ChatGPT is going to be the new, oh my God, ChatGPT says that I'm a pedophile or whatever, you know what I mean? Like it's pulling wrong information or it's finding stuff that was buried. I don't know what that's going to look like yet, but I have my eyes on it.
Mary?
Yeah, I mean, AI is definitely a trend for sure. I think learning how a lot of people ask us if we use it. I'm not a fan of using it for what we do because people hire us for our expertise. I like it as an idea generation. Like if you're getting stuck or like maybe rephrasing something, that's fine. But I think it's like this really challenging standpoint where you have a lot of people who I feel like it takes away like beginners and middle level roles.
Yeah.
You have a lot of people who are very skilled, but then like you have people who are like lower level who, if given the option, most humans go for the easier way. Mm-hmm. Not everyone is the hustle. Like, I really want to learn this, dig in. Not everyone's like that. If they can just like put in some prompts and like, I had it once write a song about Mary having fun on a Tuesday, right? It had a hook, it had lyrics, it had a beat. I was very impressed with this. It was really funny. It's as if they knew me. But most they don't really know like that, right? Or they use the same phrasing, terminology when doing certain things. And so I think for PR firms, like really identifying how you, because you can't not be aware of it. You can't like completely turn
ignore knife. It.
You're going to look like you're very backwards. But I think it's like, how do you utilize it where you're still having people learn skills Like, I just get terrified of mm-hmm. someone who's like a lower level who I know has like not like an op-ed writer, all of a sudden writing really great, amazing things out of nowhere. And then me thinking they're ready for like another level. Yeah. Right. Or if you are going to use it, being like creating an office that's transparent enough and like open enough where like you ask your manager, like, hey, I'm feeling a little stuck. Do you mind if I just like see like how this happens? Because if you don't do that, first of all, there are companies who AI check your pitches.
Yeah.
Right. So like if you get caught in that, that looks real bad. Right. We haven't, but that would look really bad if you did. Right. And then they're like, why are they paying you? They could do it themselves. Right. And it's about how do you continue to show value mm-hmm. in a way that you're still charging. Now, yes, people say like, well, you could be more efficient and be able to take on more work. But with the work, the type of work that we do is like very thought driven and collect driven. It's not like data entry or you're writing like a standard contract.
Yeah.
I had to take someone's background, beliefs, expertise, and integrate that into the news through a conversation that you have that this AI bot knows nothing about.
Right.
Right. And so I think that's really how to manage AI is going to be a really big one for me. And I also think even though people are talking about recessions and stuff like that, but it's really for like these bigger companies that we're seeing it impact. So for like companies like us that are like smaller, it's actually a benefit for us because those people, like that's how I got started in a pandemic. No one could afford these large companies anymore. Right. So they came to us. And yeah. So I think there's in any sort of negative downturn or potential, it does give rise for opportunities for people like us, as long as it's like the bigger companies that are feeling it, not the smaller ones.
Agree. Well, thank you, ladies. This was conversation that went a lot of directions, but I still think it was useful nonetheless. And I think it's really important to really, if you are doing PR, marketing of any sort, understand the dynamics of the media, the PR industry, the marketing industry, how people are evolving in each of these. So I think this is a great conversation. Thank you so much for joining the summit. I look forward to seeing you guys in future wind downs and other webinars, and have a great happy holiday. Thank you.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for having me. It was really fun.